Welcome to episode 121 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and the guest on today's podcast is Augustus Rose, whose debut novel, The Ready-Made Thief, was just published. I think it's safe to say that genre fiction, and that includes mysteries and thrillers, can now be broken down into microcategories. The Ready-Made Thief is very much a crime fiction novel, but it's more. There's conspiracy, urban exploration, physics, chemistry, breaking and entering, and Marcel Duchamp. Here's Augustus Rose to talk about The Ready-Made Thief. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and I'm very excited to have Augustus Rose on the podcast today. Today is August 1st. It is Augustus's pub day for his debut novel, The Ready-Made Thief. Welcome, Augustus.
Thank you so much, Nancy. It's such a pleasure talking to you.
I have to admit, I'm really intimidated. The Ready-Made Thief is a mystery that sort of weaves together a 21st century 17-year-old girl against a conspiracy that includes quantum physics, string theory, unified field theory, Marcel Duchamp, and chemistry. So... way above my level of education. But I was wondering which thread of the story came first.
Well, I mean, frankly, it's all way above my education, too. And I just, these are areas that I'm just curious about and interested in and you know, researched a lot before writing the book because I knew I wanted to write about these things. But mostly, you know, at the center of the book is the early 20th century artist Marcel Duchamp, who is an artist I've been kind of obsessed with since I was a young man and you know, have wanted to write a book around for a long time. I'm just absolutely fascinated with him and his work and had made several kind of false starts, bad attempts at writing him as a character and threw those away and found a way to approach it with more of his work and his legacy and even him as a background rather than as a central character. So it started with Duchamp, I think.
In the notes that accompanied the advanced reading copy that I received, you did say you had what you termed a low-grade obsession with Duchamp. And the title of your book is a nod to some of his works. But some of the characters in the book have far more than a low-grade obsession. So I was wondering, was it difficult to write about Duchamp, who you admire, and include characters who have taken his work into the realm of deeply crazy?
I think that was one of the most fun things about the book, is sort of taking my own obsessions about him into the realm of the deeply crazy, as you so brilliantly put it, and transferring those obsessions to this group. You know, when I started researching the book in earnest and looking closely at his work, I found that all of his work is interconnected in some way and self-referential. And if you look at it, you can see it as a kind of large puzzle, and that it doesn't necessarily have one solution, but it offers a solution that depends on who's looking at it, and the viewer gives their own solution to it. And I imagine this group, who were so obsessed with him and his work into finding a very particular solution that they believed was kind of encrypted in one of his major hidden works. And I just, you know, I followed that, and I started connecting the kinds of dots that I thought they would connect. And the deeper I looked into it, the more dots I found to connect. And I, you know, the book evolved almost like conspiracies evolved. So it's just connecting dots that I saw that weren't necessarily there, but that this group might see there because it fit with what they wanted to see.
So the society...
Anani.
Anani.
And I don't speak French, so I had to have a friend help me with that.
Is a creation of your mind, of your imagination, to sort of propel this
roiling conspiracy. It's something that you created to move the story into. Really, it goes someplace that's hard to describe.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unlikely, frankly, even unbelievable concept that such a group could exist. But to make it believable, I had to ground it in, group dynamics and groups that do exist. So I was always interested in tight-knit groups that had a charismatic leader, cults, for instance, and especially groups that started from a relatively benign place, and that through some combination of that leader's ego or their pride or envy, transgressing past a certain line and into a very dark place. And so, I think the trick for me was coming up, I loved writing this group, but the trick for me was in making them believable and grounding them in a certain realism of the book, and making a reader, buy into it and not thinking it was too fantastical.
Well, I think one of the ways you do that is very believable because you use the construct of these secret raves, which is something that every big city has. You get in with a password, you have to be a follower of a certain social media account, whether it's Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter, to find these venues. And so that seemed like a really great opening, a really great invitation for your main character, Lee Cuddy, to find her way into this world, or for this world to find her, however that happened.
Yeah, I think there's something we can all identify with, right? Is being invited, the thrill of being invited into something that's kind of secret and closed and very careful about who they let in. And, to give Lee an invitation to this, I think readers know that following where that invitation goes is a terrible choice on her part, but we hopefully, readers also understand it and know that they would be at least, they would at least be pulled in that direction.
You also, in the notes that accompanied the arc, said that the novel was reminiscent of Michael Chabon's The Yiddish Policeman's Union. But I think it reminds me more of Christopher Fowler's Bryant and May series, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with them. Because the series takes place in London. The city's past and conspiracies are always part of the plot. And in The Ready-Made Thief, you've got a secret hidden Philadelphia. And I was wondering, are the unseen sides of cities and the currents of history that run through them something that intrigue you? You're not from Philadelphia. So, I found that really an interesting take on a city.
Yeah, I had actually never been to Philadelphia before I started writing the book. It takes place in Philadelphia out of necessity because, I knew I wanted the book to surround Duchamp's works, and his major works are permanently on display at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And permanently, they can't be moved or they'd be destroyed, those kinds of works. And so I knew it had to be in Philadelphia. So I started the book to some extent, and then I came here to Philly to spend a week researching the city and looking around the city and digging around. And luckily, it was just it seemed like the perfect city for this book. Everything you were talking about, there does seem to be a kind of subterranean underground vibe to the city. There's a lot of empty, derelict, beautiful, old, crumbling buildings. And of course, it's got this kind of really old history to it, and there was so much already to work with. It was one of those cities that you just get to, and it just, you know, for me, it just resonated immediately that I love this place. And so it was just a happy coincidence, I think.
I thought some of the scenes, it also has a river running through it, or more than one river running through it, actually. And that always helps with small islands and boats. And, you know, I always get all, you know, it gets mythical when you take a boat someplace across the river to a secret. Yeah. And I read something into that. Right at the beginning of the book, she does that. She gets on a boat and goes to an island, a deserted island, and goes underneath. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great.
That's an amazing, insightful perspective, you know, insight. Because, you know, that wasn't anything I intended, but you're absolutely right. Crossing rivers is such a mythology behind that act, and it is such a crossing of boundaries, you know, through worlds. And I think the book, you know, takes Lee, my character, you know, into another world, a kind of underground world. And you're right, it starts with that.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Lee, and I had a similar conversation with another author recently about characters that have a natural skill set for becoming career criminals. And Lee, she's a good person, but she has the natural skills to be the ready-made thief. And I was wondering if she had that skill set from the moment you created her.
That's another really good question. And I'm going to think about that as I answer.
Okay.
She had a very typical teenage qualities that I drew from my own experience as a teenager, that of feeling invisible and feeling unseen, and also kind of hating that, but also feeling a safety in that. And I think from there came what you're talking about, this kind of special skill that I ended up developing, that feeling of invisibility, into like her being able to use that to her advantage in some way, to, you know, steal things, to, you know, enter in and out of various buildings and locations and you know, the homes of vacationing Philadelphians, and to try and kind of stay in the shadows and skirt places unseen. But I think that is all rooted in that, I think, very universal teenage trait of feeling invisible in some way. I just kind of, you know, expanded on that in some way.
And also she meets up with other people. In her case, it's not Silk Road. Her hangout on the dark web would be what you call subnet, where she sort of meets fellow travelers, you know, emotionally and philosophical brothers and sisters that share her values, shall we say.
Yeah. I mean, another area that I knew I wanted to write about, which I've always been fascinated with, and which fit some themes of the book, was urban exploration. And so I created a character who was, you know, an urban explorer, but was also involved in the kind of equivalent of that on the web, the dark net. But for me, at least what I've been able to tell, the reality of the dark net is, it's, you know, it's a lot of trade in drugs and guns and child pornography and, you know, alt-right trolls and stuff like that. And I wanted to create a more carefully vetted, more utopian society within that, where, you know, what's being traded is not all of that kind of stuff, but more hidden information. And where people's identities were anonymous, but they were carefully, you know, they meant something. They kind of had reputations to protect, and that they, there was a kind of communal feel to it. And I like the idea of that, that there might exist some more utopian version of, you know, the Silk Road or the Darknet or places where, you know, it's mostly pretty ugly, I think.
And one of the ways you do that is you create in your book an alternate Wikipedia to identify.
Right.
And I thought that was a little bit of a brilliant touch. And if there isn't one, I would really like the idea of someone creating that.
I know. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
And I was going to ask you a question. You've already answered it in a way that you didn't infantilize Lee. She's 17, and I think most of us, no matter how far away you are from the age of 17, realize that you really sort of have your whole brain. What you don't have are maybe experiences to draw on, but your intellect is pretty much formed. And Lee is really good at surviving, number one, and figuring stuff out. And did you feel when you were writing her that you were writing against expectations to make her this way? That you know, obviously this is not a YA novel, but I mean, I would, if I had a teenager, I would encourage him or her to read this book. I think some of the experiences that Lee goes through are pretty informative, as well as entertaining. So, you know, I was wondering, you were writing her, were you saying to yourself, no, a 17-year-old couldn't do this, but when in fact she could?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I you're right. I wrote it as an adult book. I do think that, you know, young people can really get into this book as well. And I never wrote her as a teen for, you know, to be read by teens. I never even really thought about it, to be honest. She was just a character who came to me, and the more I learned about her, the more strength and intuition and intelligence I found in her, and I just kept following that. And I tried, you know, I guess not to get too wonky about the writing, but I tried to control what I call the narrative distance between the narrator of the book and the character, so that, you know, sometimes we're like really close, merged in with Lee, where we just feel like we're right in her consciousness, but then sometimes it pulls back a little bit, and we're getting more of a distanced view of her and more of a kind of adult, quote-unquote, perspective of her.
Well, you mentioned getting wonky with the writing, so you in a way you anticipated my next question. You teach fiction writing at the University of Chicago, so I'm curious. Did you break any of the rules of writing when you wrote The Ready-Made Thief that you teach your students?
That's a good question. I'm sure I broke most of the rules, but I teach the rules that, you know, in a way that I encourage them to learn them and to internalize them just so they can break them and play around with them. You know, my beginning fiction writing students, I always encourage them to you know, to maintain a consistent point of view and a consistent narrative distance, for instance. And in this book, you know, my narrative distance just goes in and out constantly. But if I'm doing it right, it's seamless, and the reader isn't noticing that. And so, yeah, I mean, I do think it's important to learn the rules, quote unquote, but only so that you can play around with them and break them, you know, with a conscious intent behind it.
And my last question, are you planning another mystery? And it will also be a genre bending novel? Because we should say that this is a mystery, but it's also, it's also more than a mystery, I thought. It's it's a kind of a philosophical look at obsession and a pure insanity in many ways.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't really intend necessarily to write a mystery novel, but at the same time, I think all novels are mystery novels at heart, and that they're always bringing up questions for the reader, and questions are always so much more interesting than answers. And so, I just kind of kept following questions that I brought up, and it became a mystery kind of naturally. And the book I'm working on now, the new one, there are elements of mystery to it, elements of the unknown and questions that the reader really wants answered. I think it probably, if we're to fall into a category, it would probably fit more into like crime fiction. But again, not like typical crime. I don't even like that word typical, but, just maybe not what you would necessarily think of. In terms of marketing as crime fiction.
Yeah, I've had this discussion with Nick Harkaway and with Christopher Fowler about mystery crime fiction that falls outside the lines and the idea of categorization. And I think maybe this world is of micro categories is a good thing,
yeah,
because it's given us an opportunity to have fiction that isn't strictly within a particular category. Although at the heart,
yeah,
your book is a crime fiction novel, and I look forward to the next one.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I think you're just to add to that. I think you're right about those kind of micro categories and how liberating that is for both the writer and readers, I think, to kind of, not have those boundaries and parameters necessarily so rigidly laid out anymore.
Will Marcel Duchamp be in your new novel?
No, I don't think he will play a part. Maybe I'll give a little nod to him somewhere if I can find a place. But I'm going to take a break from Duchamp for a bit and see what happens. That doesn't mean I won't ever, return to him, because I still love his work and everything about him. Exactly. I don't think I've scratched the surface.
I want to thank you for your time, Augustus, and for joining us and talking about The Ready-Made Thief. And once again, I want to congratulate you on your pub day. It's got to be incredibly exciting to hold your first book and know that it's out there in the world.
Yes, thank you so much. It really is. I mean, I've been working at this, being a writer and writing novels for a very long time, so to have it in my hands is, as you say, is absolutely the culmination of a lot of, blind faith, and it feels great.
Well, thank you again, and look forward to talking to you when your next book is out.
Thank you so much, Nancy. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.